Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Friday, December 12, 2014. A big Democratic sellout in a House vote on a budget bill, aided and abetted by the White House. It is pretty unbelievable. Democrats were led over a fiscal cliff by Barack Obama. And, yeah, they say that these, you know, huge bills worth $1 trillion that have so many elements to them are always a product of compromise. And therefore, if everybody's unhappy, that must mean it's good. But once again, we see shaping up a preview of what is to come. 57 Democrats bailed out John Boehner, the Republican Speaker of the House, by voting for a really bad package late last night. And those 57 Democrats got cover from Barack Obama, from Joe Biden, who were feverishly calling right up until the time of the vote, and even Jamie Dimon, the bankster from Wall Street, was calling his Republican buddies, saying, hey, there's some good stuff in there for us. Yesterday, I recapped for you some of the bad elements of this bill. I'm sure we'll discover more because we know that it was cobbled together, some of it deep in the darkness of back rooms. And there'll be many surprises. Kind of like, you know, Christmas stockings. You just keep reaching in there and, oh gosh, a cut to EPA funding. Oh gosh, an increase for fat cats to give even more money to political campaigns. Oh, and by the way, a gift for Wall Street so that they can resume trading in derivatives and put the economy at risk once again. And Nancy Pelosi isn't perfect. I've got a lot of gripes about her leadership. But she did try to rally her caucus yesterday and keep them in line. And she did so in the preliminary vote, where John Boehner had to go and twist a couple of arms in order to get that qualifying vote to go in his favor. And I'm going to post a link to the roll call of the vote so that you can see if your member of Congress sold you out. Here in California, people like Ami Berra from Sacramento, John Garamendi, he's been a good friend of mine and often votes in a progressive manner, Sam Farr from Monterey. Sam, shame on you. I can't believe you would do this. And there were a couple of other defectors of some note, people who we would expect to vote the right way on an issue like this. Brad Sherman, my old buddy, from Southern California, from Sherman Oaks. He voted for this piece of crap. And often they have excuses. Oh, you know, my bill was in there, my pet project, or funding for a military base in my district. I think that's Garamendi's response. But George Miller, this is one of his last votes in the Congress. He's been a stalwart for progressives. George, why would you vote for a piece of crap like this? I don't have the answers, but I invite you to take a look at the roll call list and express your displeasure if you find your representative on that list. Today's stories all seem to comprise or include an element of hypocrisy. For example, President Obama is about to sign into law a bill that would impose sanctions on the Venezuelan government and officials there for human rights violations, violence against protesters who took part in anti-government demonstrations in Venezuela during this past year. Now, who are we to lecture the Venezuelans on how to handle protests? Ferguson, the Occupy movement, the treatment of whistleblowers, including journalists. The U.S. has no moral high ground to maintain. And I don't actually know who wrote this bill, but I think it would be a good idea for the U.S. to avoid meddling and in the internal affairs of other countries and lecturing them. Because, for example, we've had continuing protests here in the Bay Area this week over the Staten Island grand jury's failure to indict the cop who gave the chokehold that killed Eric Garner. And the protests have been at times unruly, violent, with destruction of property and occasional looting. And I don't support any of that. But I also don't support the insertion of undercover officers from the California Highway Patrol in the crowd of protesters. Now, when I was growing up, there was a TV show called Highway Patrol starring Broderick Crawford. And the CHP has changed quite a bit. Many of you remember the Eric Estrada Chips show. But in most cases, the Highway Patrol is a relatively benign officer or law enforcement agency that enforces the speed laws and, you know, helps deal with tie-ups on the freeways. They're also charged with guarding dignitaries up to and including the governor. But I've never heard that the Highway Patrol has a role in local protests. Now, they can argue that some of these protests have led to the shutdown of state highways and interstate highways. That still doesn't rationalize inserting undercover chips into protest crowds. So on Wednesday night, there were about 50 people marching in Oakland. And some of the demonstrators figured out that two of the people with them were undercover cops, and they outed them. Here's a quote from somebody in the crowd. "Just as we turned up 27th Street, the crowd started yelling at these two guys saying they were undercover cops. Somebody snatched a hat off the shorter guy's head, and he was fumbling around for it. A guy ran up behind him, knocked him down on the ground. That guy jumped back up and chased after him and tackled him, and the crowd began surging around them. The other taller guy had a small baton out, but as the crowd started surging, he pulled out a gun." Now, a spokesman for the Highway Patrol said that the officer, whom he refuses to identify, pulled out a badge and identified himself as a law enforcement officer. But media and protesters reported that they never saw a badge. And so the incident was resolved with the arrest of one individual who is being charged with some sort of violence against the undercover cop. But this raises more questions. For example, why the CHP? And one analyst who I read online suggested that CHP officers who are accused of any kind of ethical violation or criminal act are investigated internally. And the Oakland Police Department, which is under federal consent decrees and court management, they're looking for ways to avoid getting their officers caught up in more controversies and lawsuits. And keep in mind that Jerry Brown, the governor, was the mayor of Oakland a few years back, and he still maintains a home there. And is this a scheme by Jerry Brown to try to, you know, ease the pressure on the bad cops in Oakland by allowing Highway Patrol officers to operate undercover in crowds? My eyebrows are raised. More charges of hypocrisy leveled against the United States because of the revelations in the Senate torture report. China joins the chorus. And all this is well-deserved. Now, I'm not saying that China has any pristine record on human rights, but we have hammered China over its treatment of dissidents for years. And so it gives them this wide-open opportunity to criticize the United States. State-run media is full of news articles and cartoons ridiculing the United States. And a spokesman for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs said, "We believe the U.S. side should reflect upon and rectify its relevant behavior, earnestly obey and implement the provisions of international conventions." Well, it's not a bad idea. Of course, the hypocrisy of China is that they have rolled up the student-led and Occupy protests in Hong Kong. It's over now. Yesterday was kind of the final scene, the denouement, as hundreds of cops armed with chainsaws and bolt cutters methodically dismantled the barricades and hauled away what is left of the encampment. 209 people were arrested for unlawful assembly, and the protesters pretty well acknowledge that it's over and they're going to look for other ways to demand the limited demands they have, which are just for direct vote, direct election of the executive who's in charge of running Hong Kong. Recently, I have praised the work of Natasha Leonard. She spells her last name L-E-N-N-A-R-D. I will link to her latest commentary, which you can find at Vice News. And I give her a lot of credit for being a good thinker and analyst. And she takes down the comments of President Obama this week as he was hypocritical and contradictory, on the one hand saying that he welcomes the release of the torture report, and on the other hand praising the great patriots whose work is revealed in that report. And Natasha Leonard raises the question that, would it have been worthwhile to waterboard, freeze, and beat all for an infamous corpse in Abbottabad? She says the answer is no. We play a dangerous game in decrying torture because it is ineffective and not because it is torture. That's a point I have raised. We also, in focusing on the failure of CIA torture and getting results, give an easy pass to the recent historical context that birthed the interrogation program. The widespread use of torture was a vile consequence. The problem was a paranoid national security ideology that would, did, and does justify any violation of rights and liberties under the pretext of fighting terror. She's very right about this. Obama ignored this true American sickness, not yet cured, when he said this week that the torture programs were the result of a panicked country acting, quote, rashly. Here's the full quote from Obama. In the aftermath of 9/11, in the midst of national trauma and uncertainty about whether these attacks were going to repeat themselves, what's clear is that the CIA set up something very fast without a lot of forethought. But Leonard rips that to shreds. This is not at all the case, she says. Rashly, I've spent too much money on a coat. Rashly, I have not, and no one has ever constructed an international and covert system of state-sanctioned torture and detention with a $300 million budget. That takes machination and ideology. And, contrary to what Obama said, forethought. Torture was no mistake, writes Leonard. It was the logical conclusion of an anything-goes premise. Obama's feigned attempt at accountability treats CIA torture like a blip and lets the same no-holds-barred national security apparatus kill civilians with drones and spy on everyone. This dark chapter of history did not close with the black sites. The corridors of Langley, the halls of Capitol Hill, and the West Wing of the White House remain lousy with the sorts of people who would permit and commit the tortures again 10 times over. Well said, Natasha. And that is going to be the final embarrassment, that none of the people who still work in the intelligence community, many of whom got promoted, like John Brennan, they're going to keep working. And because they are professional liars, we have no promise that they actually will reform. They'll just get better at disguising it and keeping it all secret. And here's another form of hypocrisy on the part of these United States, the exceptional America. That is that for years, and continuing right up to this very moment, the prisons and detention facilities where we hold immigrants who are caught at the border or who are being held for deportation or other processing are barbaric, and they approach conditions that amount to torture. And it took The Guardian in Britain to note that hypocrisy and publish a story today by Ed Pilkington, where he talks about one migrant who was put in a 15 by 45 foot concrete cell with 30 other migrants. Her clothes were still wet from crossing the river, but according to the account she gave, officers wouldn't let her change into the dry clothes that she had ready in her backpack. They wanted to maintain her wetback status. The cell was a cold box. She and her child shivered on the concrete floor. They lost sense of time. There were no windows at the border station where they were being held. She was there for a couple of nights and days, she thinks, then flown to a Tucson border station where she was held for another 7 days. There she and her daughter were again put into a cell so cold that her lips chapped. She developed a cough and eventually contracted a fever that led to brief hospitalization. In studies of migrants conducted this year, 94% complained that the bare concrete cells in which they were kept had been too cold or even freezing. 30 of 33 individuals in the survey said they'd been unable to sleep because of bright lights that were kept blazing 24 hours a day. And they used to continuously play loud music, including songs with messages about people dying in the desert. Apparently that has stopped. But in addition to the extreme temperatures, there are instances of detainees being forced to stand in strenuous or painful positions, prevention of sleep through forced standing or banging on cell doors. And this doesn't even take into account the bad actors who permeate either the private prison staff or those employed by the federal government who run these prisons. There are widespread accusations of rape, other forms of assault, and it's a huge disgrace. And our media ignores it. Most of our elected officials never acknowledge it. But we just did here. I want to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. Chris Welsh, Susan Gavet, Peter Carroll, Jeffrey Zeiser, they're all subscribers here. Kick in $5 a month, and I invite you to do it too. Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click on the link under my picture that says sign up. That'll take you to a page where you choose $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers anywhere within the sound of my voice qualify for our bonus gift, and that is an e-book edition of Pepe Escobar's exciting new book called Empire of Chaos. Well, Eric Holder, the still Attorney General, he resigned, but there is no imminent prospect that he'll leave office because it's contingent on the confirmation of his replacement. He's facing a couple of important decisions over the next few days. He has to decide by Tuesday whether to continue the case against James Risen, the New York Times reporter who is being forced to testify in the leak trial of a former CIA officer. We know quite a bit about that, but here's a new case that Holder has to decide upon. It's brought forward by Preet Bharara, who is the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, and he wants to subpoena a reporter for CBS News named Richard Bonin. He's a producer. You probably haven't seen him on camera, but this is a 16-year-old case going back to 1998, because Bonin made contact with some members of Al-Qaeda at a media office in London. He was investigating the 98 attacks. And now they want him to testify. And he is resisting. He and CBS have retained a First Amendment attorney. And the point the attorney makes is that this is a very minor issue. The limited value of the testimony cannot justify the dramatic impact on Bonin's ability to do his job and on the increased risk to other journalists that will result by forcing a reporter to testify in this prosecution about things learned solely in the course of news gathering. And this is another form of hypocrisy on the part of Obama and this administration. the man who claimed he was going to be so transparent, is busy chasing journalists, including one for a case that goes back to the last damn century. It's ridiculous. As you may know, a couple of days ago, a Palestinian official, Ziad Abu Ayn, died under suspicious circumstances. There have been autopsies now. One conducted by Israel said, he died of natural causes. He had a heart attack. And a pathologist on the Palestinian side said, he died of a coronary artery hemorrhage. But he was beaten up in a confrontation with Israeli border police. He had been shoved by soldiers and border police officers trying to prevent demonstrators from reaching a patch of land where they intended to plant olive trees. Yeah, that's a vicious act that had to be stopped. And in addition to the hemorrhage in the coronary artery, the Palestinian pathologist pointed to wounds in Ayn's front teeth, bruises on the tongue, neck, and windpipe, indicative of violent acts that led to his death. Now, in the bigger picture, this incident may cause a breakdown of the deal between Israel and the Fatah leaders in the West Bank that allows coordination with Shin Bet and other Israeli military and police units by the Palestinian Authority. And it's really interesting. In the next few days, I'll be able to release to you an interview that I conducted Wednesday night with Professor Richard Falk. He just completed a 6-year run as the UN Rapporteur for Palestine. He's published a new book called Palestine, The Legitimacy of Hope. And one of the things he comments on is the timid posture, particularly of Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinians. And Abbas seems to be resisting calls from more forceful members of his party to cut off all forms of security coordination with Israel. We'll be watching this one. We've had these embarrassing revelations, again with a dose of hypocrisy, related to U.S. activities in Cuba. And the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is widely believed to be a front for the CIA, has been active in Cuba, and many of its programs have been exposed, including the fake Twitter system they set up and a few other schemes that have now seen the light of day. The latest is that we recruited a Serbian music promoter, sent him to Cuba, so that he could rally rap and hip-hop artists who perform in Cuba and try to get them to oppose the Castro government. And you really have to wonder who cooks up these crazy schemes. Because, the news account says, instead of sparking a democratic revolution, it compromised an authentic source of protest that had produced some of the hardest-hitting grassroots criticism since Fidel Castro took power in 1959. And it's not a secret in other parts of the world that USAID was the agency that funneled $5 billion or coordinated the funneling of $5 billion into the coup in Ukraine that occurred this year. And there's an American, his name is Alan, I'm sorry I don't have his last name in front of me, but he's being held in Cuba, and we keep saying that he's an innocent guy, he's not a spy, he should be released. But my suspicion is he's part of the misguided USAID efforts. And our sanctions against Cuba, the blockade there, is the longest-running policy blunder the United States has ever undertaken, in my humble opinion. And it looked like Obama was going to change things. But it becomes yet another disappointment about Mr. Hope and Change. And in Britain, as we wrap up today, I bring you news of a protest where a woman in public is sitting on a man's face. Well, it got my attention, and I imagine that just got yours. Sex workers and their supporters have gathered in front of Parliament to protest changes to UK pornography regulations. Protesters say the list of banned activities that cannot be depicted in porn films include face-sitting. And so, let me just assure you that the simulated sex protest outside Parliament involved a man who lay down and a woman who straddled him, but both were fully clothed. And the other activities involve, things like bondage and domination. And I think there's an important free speech issue here. Because the idea that laws can restrict human fantasies and the way our imaginations work and what we find erotic. Now, I'll be candid with you. I'm partial to a little face-sitting now and then. I don't get involved in bondage or domination. I've never whipped or been whipped. I don't believe in any kind of pain in a sexual context. But to act out for the purposes of a film, and I'm not talking about snuff films that are, supposed to be real. I'm talking about porn films where nothing is real except the orgasms of men appear to be real. Beyond that, there's just a lot of acting going on. And the idea that Parliament doesn't have better things to do than to outlaw face-sitting in British-made porn films, well, that seems pretty damn crazy to me. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. This is the free podcast that you're authorized to share with absolutely everyone. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.